giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMZ.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Humanity First. My name is Peter Evers, and this is a show brought to you by BAMZ. And we're in May. We're about halfway through May. And as many of you will know, May is Mental Health Month, and we're having a number of celebrations actually at BAMZ and in our communities over the month. And of course, in my opinion, mental health is every day of every month of every year, because and now, of course, is an incredibly important time post COVID, and as we talked about a little bit before, the presence of technology in the developing adolescent is something that, as a country, I think we're all really worried about. So we're sort of going to weave in some of those issues today and talk about the diversity, equity, and inclusion movement that is going on in this country. And in many ways, we're moving into a period of time where we're actually beginning to pay attention to some of the inequities that have existed over the last, I don't know how many years, I was maybe say 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. And in that time, recently we're on a learning path as a country. In some ways we're a divided country around some of these issues, but I have two very special guests in the studio today. I have Gwen Broadway. Hi, Gwen. How
Hello.
Are you? And she's our director of scheduling. I nearly said scheduling.
I know.
Of scheduling and staff. God bless you, because that's a very difficult job.
Yes, it is.
And also Kat Stewart. Hi, Kat. How
Hi.
Are you doing?
Good.
And Kat is our director of operations in our behavioral health and children's services. So two folks that are really involved in our diversity and equity programs at BAMZ, which really have taken on a life of their own, especially since the summer of 2020, when this country witnessed the murder of George Floyd, a terrible moment in American culture and society, but also a moment that sparked interest from all sorts of places, perhaps where there hadn't been this interest before. So in some sense, that really was a moment that began a different way of looking at issues of inequity in society. And I thought it'd be great to have have you on, because you play such an important role within the organization. But the conversation I'd like to have is more about, is broader than that. It's about some of the things that are going on in society which are dividing us, and some of the things that are going on in society that sometimes we say we're making great progress in this country, and then there's a little bit of a bang on the head and says, well, wait a minute, is that really the case? So, Kat, let me start with you. When we were doing the prep for this show, I had said that when I first came to this country in 1990, I was having a debate with somebody about women's rights. And my friend, he's still my friend, said, that's not an issue anymore in America. That we have legislated that. It's been asked and answered. You know, the right for a woman to choose is inexorably written in law. Well, we know that actually was not the case. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats could have done something about that a long time ago, but they didn't. And now we're in this situation where the Supreme Court has made some decisions which actually are not supporting women's rights. I mean, in the context of that, you know, do you feel that way? Do you feel as a woman that you're under attack?
Yes, very much so. I feel like if I can't walk through this world with the exact same rights as men, then yes, I'm under attack. If I have to have a life-saving medical procedure and I live in a state where that's not allowed, that's a problem. And I think it's unfortunate that that's where we're at still after so many years, that it was the law of the land and it is not anymore. I take concern with that for sure.
Yeah, I think, and Gwen, I mean, let me just ask you as well. I mean, this is such a massive issue that is dividing the country at the moment. Not necessarily dividing along gender lines either. When you have conversations with mm-hmm. All kinds of people who are supporting the decisions of the Supreme Court, and a country divided in a way. And when we look at divisions, there really is a divide here, right, when it comes to a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, we how many years it took us to get the right to vote. I mean, that was how many years ago? And even for women of color, I mean, it was even harder for us to vote after mm-hmm. women fought to get rights to vote. So I think we are truly dealing with this every day, women's rights. It's sickening to see that people are taking away our rights as women when we should have a voice over our own bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It may seem so obvious to so many of us, but not to so many others. And that, I think that's one of the things that really worries us. And just sort of to bring that back into the mental health mm-hmm. Sort of equation, because I believe that, you know, our mental health is managed by ourselves, but is pressed down upon by many of the things that we deal with in our communities. And oftentimes we don't take into account that, I mean, COVID is a good example, right? COVID happened, but it wasn't an equal opportunity pandemic. It was mm-hmm. a pandemic that affected women much more than men, because mm-hmm. who were the primary caretakers usually of children, and so many women left the workplace there. Communities of color mm-hmm. who were in jobs that, you know, people couldn't work from home, so were put at more risk, for example. We think of ourselves, I think, as a country, and this is true of Europe as well, that we've made a lot of progress, but there are issues like the George Floyd murder that sort of bring us back to wondering how far we've come. And, mm-hmm. and going, let me ask you about that, because we thought with the election of, I'll never forget watching a show mm-hmm. after Barack Obama was elected, and the newscaster, I think it was Dan Rather actually, said something like, now, are we finally facing a post-racial America? Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that and I thought, well, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It didn't necessarily work out that way, did it?
No, I mm-hmm. actually think it got worse. People were targeted for all different reasons. Personally, my son, who worked at Amazon, they just delivering packages to people's houses in a neighboring, in the South Shore area. I mean, every day he was getting bottles thrown at him. He was getting followed. He was getting called racial slur words just for going to work. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how far do we really come?
Yeah. And then you begin to think about, well, what kind of effect does that have on an individual's mental health? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really important to note that there are times when these differences are so clear. And many of my friends talk about the talk when they have, when people of color have children. Mm-hmm. I never ever had that conversation with any of my three children.
Yeah, it's really sad, Peter, because every day that my son goes out, I think about if he's going to call me, if he's going to be dead or if he's going to be alive or if he got pulled over by the police. You're honestly always on edge every single day having a black son or a black daughter, which I do. You never know what phone call you may get at any time, and your nerves is always on edge.
Something that is very difficult to understand for somebody like me. Mm-hmm. When I get stopped by the police, and I have been stopped a couple of times mm-hmm. because I've got a lead foot, the last thing I think, well, I wind down the window and I'm as polite as I can be to the officer, but I don't assume mm-hmm. that something bad is going to happen. And that is a real privilege for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we got to teach our sons, like, I have to change up everything. Put your registration in your visor. Don't move too quick. Answer everyone's questions correctly. All the stuff we got to do to make sure our son come home every night. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, you'll never experience. Mm-hmm. Peter will never experience. And it's something that you think about every single day. You cannot just wake up and be like, okay, today's a brand new day. It's something that's always constant.
Mm-hmm. It's really important that as a group, you have the ability to talk about those things as well. And Kat, we'll get back to you in a second, but yeah. I just want to follow up on something. That also was happening in our workplace, wasn't mm-hmm. it? In terms of you know, BIPOC folks coming to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this isn't a BAMSI issue. I think it's an issue that goes across all communities, that in some neighborhoods, it's very difficult for people who work in residential homes, for instance, because they're being stopped by the police on the way to work, or they're being stopped pushing a wheelchair on the sidewalk, mm-hmm. With one of our persons served. You've done a lot of work within our Deja committee around that. Do you want to talk about that a little
bit? What we did the road show, and we went out to one of the programs and just talking to the staff, and they just talked about how they were getting harassed going to and from work. And I was like, what do you mean by harassed? They were like, no, they would never pull us over. They would just follow us mm-hmm. to like the Rhode Island line and pull off. Wow. And I was like, oh, this is happening to and from work. So when I brought it to the Deja group, I'm like, okay, we need to talk to Peter about this. He mm-hmm. needs to address this, because these are our staff just going to and from work. And that has to be annoying and frustrating, scared. I mean, a staff said that he didn't know if he should get life insurance on him because he doesn't know if he's going to die.
Wow.
Straight. Amazing.
Mm. You know. Mm.
So what happened next?
And then, so what happened next is that you kind of met with the police commissioner and you guys had a conversation. I think you brought the staff, some staff showed up at least, and they talked with the police commissioner and try to come out with a solution. And since then, from which I haven't heard, hopefully it stopped. But, you know, no one has come back to me mm-hmm. and said, like, it's still happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kat, sorry.
So I just want to make a comment mm-hmm. on that. I think it's so important mm-hmm. that these stories are being told, because as mm-hmm. I'm sitting here thinking about mm-hmm. my own experiences as a mother, like, I don't mm-hmm. have to worry about what you have to worry about. And yes. so the toll that it takes on your mental health, but also to working in this field is hard.
Yes.
And then you have this added layer. Mm-hmm. So I think having these types of conversations are important, and mm-hmm. people need to take the time to listen,
yes.
you know, about what's really happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Totally is, because this isn't myth. This isn't fantasy.
No.
This is reality. And I will give a shout out to the police department. I won't mention which, there's been a few.
Mm-hmm.
But when these issues were brought to the chief, in one particular case, the case mm-hmm. that you're talking about, mm-hmm. the lieutenant, and the chief came out mm-hmm. to the house, sat with the staff, mm-hmm. Spent an hour and a half chatting mm-hmm. about what is and staff of color, and by the way, many staff from Africa as well in the house talked about their experience as being new Americans, mm-hmm. and it was yeah. just this really nice moment where this particular police chief knew exactly what to say, mm-hmm. not to deny people's realities, to talk about the work that all police forces had to do in order to, you know, look like the communities that they serve in, and be aware of unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. this was, police chief had done a lot of work on this, and I was happy about that. I don't know if people are still being followed, but certainly haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, like on my end, I've told you, no one has came back to me and said it's still being a problem. But I can always go back and ask them, reach out to them, like, is those issues right. still happening? But far as I know, it's not.
Well, it's good to hear. Mm-hmm. It's a small victory in a very long fight, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and when we talk about equity and justice, and I believe that social justice runs through everything that we do in this organization mm-hmm. and in our communities as well. You know, and as we think about the LGBTQ population, and I know, Kat, that you've been involved in the subgroup that works mm-hmm. there, we shouldn't forget that there are laws or attempted legislation, which is mm-hmm. really will end up with laws that sort of legislate trans
right.
People out of existence. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the stories that you've heard around. I mean, how does that affect mm-hmm. a group of people mm-hmm. who feel under
yeah.
threat?
I mean, largely. I mean, think about it. Someone else is dictating what you can and cannot do and how you can live your life. And I think, you know, they're taking their power, the legislation, to try to control a group of people that just want to be who they are. And it takes a large toll. I mean, you see it in young people who have high rates of depression and suicide and significant mm-hmm. mental health issues, and all they're looking for is some level of acceptance and being able to live their life, you know, freely like everyone else has the ability to. So it's hard to see, and it's hard to see people hurting because of their lives not being valued, you know, based on whatever's happening in the government.
There is so much to do. There is so much that's been done. Mm-hmm. This issue is alive, yeah. And this issue needs to be debated. And I really appreciate that you said that conversations mm-hmm. need to be had,
yeah. mm-hmm.
even if we have different opinions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We need to debate these issues right. because it's all about human rights in the end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to thank you so much for coming
thank
in today
you.
And
yes,
learned
again.
A lot. and hopefully, you know, we can come back in a few months and see where we are.
Yes.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank
both
you.
Of you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm an essential worker here at BAMSI, and I'm a nurse. Nurses are essential here at BAMSI because as nurses, we really have the opportunity to make an impact. We have very small ratios, so we have the opportunity to really learn everything about the person served and be able to give the best care. It really serves such a great purpose for me as being a nurse and really why I came into nursing. Learn more about nursing opportunities at BAMSIjobs.org.
Giving a voice to the voiceless, pulling stories out of the shadows and putting them under the spotlight, making sure that each person is valued and cared for. This is Humanity First with Peter Evers, presented by BAMSI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Peter Evers again with Humanity First. It was so great to have Kat and Gwen on the show. They are really deeply involved in this sort of striving for equity and justice in our communities, as so many people are in the great state of Massachusetts. It still is Mental Health Month, month of May. And so I think it's still important that we have conversations about mental health. And even more important that we talk a little bit about the mental health of children and adolescents. This week, my youngest son was 30 years old, which makes me feel very old. I no longer have a child in their 20s. I watched him mourn the old age of youth, if you like, and he is, you know, contemplating the next stage of his life. And I often wondered, while I was looking at him while we were celebrating, how he would have fared if he had had the technology in his hands that children do today. He probably, along with my other two children and everybody else in that generation, were the last group who did not have a smartphone or a tablet in their hands by the time that they were 3 or 4 or even 5 years old. In many ways, that was the end of an era, because the next group coming up really were the technology children. As we look at mental health of children post-COVID, I think it's really, really important that we ask ourselves, what are the benefits and the downfalls of technology? What role has technology played in the development of our children? And there are good things and there are bad things. Knowing stuff is no longer currency. You'll never, ever overhear again a conversation at a restaurant table where somebody's saying, "Who is that guy who won the Oscar in Dances with Wolves?" Why? Because within 5 seconds, somebody will have picked up their smartphone and Googled the fact that it was Kevin Costner. Now, whether or not you agree with it, it was Kevin Costner. But that debate, that discussion is no longer had. So if knowledge is no longer the currency, what things are important to young people today? They're probably the same as they were 50 and 100 years ago. Most of those things nowadays, though, revolve around social media and the notion of acceptance into various groups. Belonging cannot be underestimated in the happiness of a young person. That being said, the internet has broadened the highway of hate in this country and all around the world. Young people are subject to a barrage of images and statements that often serve to undermine and destroy their confidence. And in turn, it affects the ability to attach and their ability to be in groups and feel comfortable. The carnage of the battle of social, of the battlefield of social media, hasn't escaped legislators. And indeed, there's a lot of legislation around at the moment addressing this. In fact, in Utah, they've just passed a bill that says that it is illegal for a child to use the social media without parental consent. I don't know if that'll work. I don't know how you would control that. I don't know how you would make sure that it was happening. Whether or not our legislators are doing the right thing, I think we're in a position now where we're having these conversations in the public eye, where we're really beginning to talk about the dangers of overexposure to social media. The better we are when we have these conversations. I don't think you'll ever be in a group of parents and you ask them to show a hand that says, I wish I had exposed my children to social media earlier. You probably asked that 100 times and you wouldn't get one hand. That's concerning. I think apps like TikTok and Instagram are finally getting the message that if they don't do something soon, then they're going to have something done to them. So they're introducing the idea of controls and what have you. And parents can actually take control of that themselves. There's an app, and there's many of them, but there's one called Bark that is really helpful in giving parents control over what is viewed and, importantly, over the length of time that children are online. Being a good parent actually means you need to be a snoop. You need to know what's going on. In our day, at the beginning of instant messaging and AOL, we as parents would have to take the keyboards off the computers and put them under our pillows every night to ensure that that our kids were safe. I think it's really important to remember that social media algorithms are designed solely to maximize profit and not for the benefit of children. Frankly, 11-year-old children are far too young to hold a supercomputer in their hands that's pointed directly at their brains. What's more, that supercomputer often preys on self-image and preys on the hormones of kids to keep their attention, and especially with vulnerable children. That can result in addiction, depression, and isolation. Ensuring that children with a serious emotional disturbance are monitored on social media is more important given the vulnerabilities of those kids who have pre-existing conditions. Parents and legislators at all of these organizations must collectively realize that the future of our country will look very different if we don't pay attention to what is going on with our kids and social media. Now, I'm not a Luddite. I don't believe in turning back the clock. Every generation of children has had something and some trauma to deal with. I think about the greatest generation, the Second World War and the First World War, when kids themselves will be picking up guns and going to fight for their country. I think about the kids who survived the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression. We all have our challenges. If we know anything about children, we know that their plastic brains are inquisitive, beautiful, resilient, and full of hope. We will survive this greatest threat as long as we hold true to the notion that the mental health of our children is the most important thing in the development of their lives and their brains. Happy Mental Health Awareness Month, everybody. Thank you, and I'll see you next time. It's Peter Evers signing off. Thank you.